Good morning, everyone. My name's Dave, and welcome to Insights for Health, brought to you by The Healthy Habit at 451 St. Clair Street in Chatham, where we help you help yourself with your health. Our topic today is blood sugar diabetes management. And joining us is Natasha Grincevachis. Natasha is a nutrition professional with a degree in food and nutrition from Ryerson University. She is an educator, a teacher, and when not chasing her toddler, you'll find her pursuing her passion for researching nutraceutical and functional foods. Good morning, Natasha, and welcome back to Insights for Health.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
So, blood sugar and diabetes. Can you provide us, Natasha, with a definition as to what is diabetes?
So the actual definition, when you look it up, is it's a disease in which your body either can't produce insulin or can't properly use the insulin that you do produce. Insulin is the hormone that we do produce in our pancreas, and its role is to regulate the amount of sugar in the blood. We eat food, we absorb those nutrients, one of them being sugar, and that sugar will go into the bloodstream. And that sugar needs to get from the blood into cells to be then metabolized into energy. It's pretty big, so it requires a facilitator, and that facilitator to move the sugar from the blood to the cells is insulin. So the more sugar we have in the blood, the more insulin that our body will produce to unlock those doors to allow those that sugar to get in there. So there's some hiccups that can happen with that mechanism. And when our body either doesn't produce the insulin, which means that we have a high blood sugar level and no sugar going into the cells to be utilized as energy, that would be considered diabetes. Or when we do produce the insulin, but we're unable to utilize it, or it's unable to facilitate that movement from the blood to the cells again. So that would be kind of how we define diabetes.
When we say sugar, the first thought might be, well, got some maple syrup or got some honey or I got a big spoon of that white stuff that I put in my coffee or whatever. It's not just that, is it?
When we eat the spoonful of honey or we put the white stuff in our coffee, you know, when we have anything that's sweet, our bodies will release certain enzymes to break those down into the base materials or the base products, which is glucose. And we can get glucose from anything that's sweet. And depending on the food will depend on how quickly and or how much glucose lands in that blood. It's the glucose that we're trying to get into the cell to be utilized as that energy source. We look at honey, we look at maple syrup, and we look at white sugar, and we're like, well, if it all breaks down into the same thing, then what's the difference? But really, there is a difference because of the makeup of honey and the makeup of maple syrup and the makeup of sugar. It's how our body responds to these different sweet things that give it their unique characteristics and why we would want to choose one over another.
But carbohydrates too, right?
Absolutely. Oh, and they get more complex as it goes on. So once we get into anything not a protein or a fat, and we have a carbohydrate, so bread, pastas, grains, some nuts and seeds, anything that is considered in that carbohydrate level, depending on all of the other factors involved in that carbohydrate, whether it's a higher fiber carb or a lower fiber carb, or if there is some proteins intermingled in there, it's definitely a lot of factors will play into how we actually break that food down, the rate, the time, and how it affects our health.
So in Canada, what is the state of blood sugar health?
It's kind of grim, unfortunately. We have over about 3 million people with a diagnosis of diabetes, and it's expected to rise 30% by the year 2030. One of the major risk factors that you'll see is obesity. And as we can see obesity, it's a tangible thing. It's visual, so we can see the rise in how much mass we're gaining as a population. But I mean, diabetes, you can't look at someone and say, oh, you have diabetes. So it's one of those things where because you can't actually see it from a visual standpoint, I don't know if we put enough clout onto it. But with obesity being one of the major risk factors, just knowing that if you're on the rise with your mass, you want to really take control of that so the insides don't start to break down. With diabetes, it's not just an irregular blood sugar. You're actually damaging a lot of your internal organ systems, your soft tissues, your increased risk of heart disease, stroke, vision loss, the whole metabolic syndrome, and anything to do with inflammation. Your inflammatory processes become through the roof when you're dealing with a disease state of diabetes. So everything is kind of exaggerated. So we can do a lot of damage and not really see it.
Yeah, and worst case scenario is amputation, isn't it?
It sure is. We get circulation issues. So all of our teeny tiny little capillaries start to die. We're not getting the flow of oxygen and carbon dioxide, making those exchanges, and those tissues get affected and inflammation takes place, and we get a lot of damage there. And sometimes what happens is that we start to lose feeling in our peripheral limbs. So we start to lose feeling in our toes and our feet, and we might bump up against something and have a wound. And because the circulation is impaired, it's very slow to heal. And anything that any organ that has a lot of small capillaries, especially up in our brain and in our eyes, you know, those are affected as well. So we have to be very careful when we do get a diagnosis of diabetes or any of the related blood sugar issues.
Yeah, so that's why it's so important. I mean, that's that microcirculation. And without management, I mean, you mentioned many of these already, but heart disease, stroke, vision loss, obesity, the inflammation, the metabolic syndrome. I guess a blood test would be the way to know for sure, but some clues are that tingling, you said, like in our fingertips, in our toes, and so on. Is there any other obvious clues or subtle clues without the blood test? I mean, we should have a blood test to know, but what would be a hint?
If you're full-blown diabetes and you have not been diagnosed, you will notice increased thirst, increased urination. Those are kind of the main symptoms that you're there. But typically, you'll probably find that you'll get a diagnosis and not even know that you had diabetes, because when you're pre-diabetic, which is, of course, the stage getting up to those blood sugar levels being too high, there you could have zero symptoms. A lot of pre-diabetic people don't know they have this risk of diabetes because they're slender or they're thin, but looked at them from the inside out, they would be a very fat person in a very thin body. You would see a lot of visceral and organ fat, which is the really harmful fat that actually damages our system, that increases that inflammatory process and causes the issues with heart and liver and that kind of thing. But it's hard because it is a tricky thing. Some other symptoms that might pop up is darkening of the skin in some areas on the neck and underarms. But not everybody gets those random symptoms, and you may not even connect that to being a symptom of prediabetes or diabetes. But I think once you get frequent urination and frequent thirst, more so where it becomes a very, you know, bothersome part of your day, that's a good telltale sign that there's something going on with your sugars.
So there's about four levels, we could say, of diabetes. Can you explain or just touch on those?
When we look at the levels of diabetes, we're looking at, I mean, when you're falling into kind of the normal, right, you're good to go, your blood sugar levels are, you eat, your body can deal with those sugars, the insulin does the job itself, you know, you're at a good, nice baseline. Pre-diabetes is when your sugar levels are a little bit too high. They're not high enough to be considered a diagnosis of diabetes, but this is when we start to perhaps lose sensitivity to the insulin, the way that the insulin works. And that is big, big risk factor. And again, the real good way to tell is if you do a blood test. Some of the other things that could indicate, though, is if you get shaky after a meal, or if you get maybe sweaty or tired. If you get really, really tired after a meal, it's a possible indication that you're just not quite processing things the way that your body wants to, and it's tuckering you out. Sugar levels are a little bit too high. Insulin is probably not as sensitive. So if you don't have that sensitivity, then your body will release more and more and more insulin. And then your body then wants to crave more and more sugar to get rid of all this insulin that's being released. And it's just this crazy downward spiral that lands in diabetes. So diabetes type 2 is it's when your blood sugar levels are far too high, your insulin is quite insensitive to your cells. So that is not working. And that's where you would probably require medical intervention of some sort. You can deal with it in a lot of different ways. And it is reversible. You absolutely can reverse diabetes, type 2 diabetes. So adults onset. And we're seeing actually less adult onset, and we're seeing more teenager or even child onset. And then we do have another kind of diabetes that's typically a genetic disorder. You tend to be born with it, and it's type 1 diabetes, where your genetic predisposition just doesn't allow your body to make insulin at all. So it used to be called, or I think people still refer to it as juvenile diabetes, because we catch on to that pretty quickly. If your body is not producing that insulin right on, you'll know that there's something wrong with your kiddo, and you'll get that taken care of. And that's you're on a lifetime regimen of insulin injections anytime you eat, and you're very, very aware of what you're eating when, and it's very monitored. And then we do have a temporary one, potentially temporary, with gestational diabetes. So it's quite frequent that women can get diabetes while they're pregnant, because you have an extra person that you are building, and your blood sugar levels can easily get swayed one way or another. You don't have as much control over it. And there are some factors that can affect that. Age, if you have a family history of diabetes, that can play a role with it as well. So we've got a couple of that. Now, you can fully recover from gestational diabetes, and you can also manage that with food and lifestyle as well as medication if you so choose. But once you have gestational diabetes, you now have a higher risk factor of getting type 2 diabetes once you've given birth, and so you just have to be a little bit more aware of what you're eating then from now on in terms of carbohydrate control.
How much sugar does the average Canadian consume versus what's recommended?
What's recommended really is like 10 kilograms a year, and the average intake is 40 kilograms per year.
Yeah, 2.2 pounds per kilogram, right?
It's the size of my Bouvier puppy. It's a lot of sugar. As a nutrition professional, I really just would rather see somebody avoid all sources of white sugar completely and have zero of those 10 kilograms. It's also that white sugar sets you up to crave more of it.
Natasha, we're going to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, let's discuss the solution to this problem.